Well, good evening, everyone. Here at the Zendo, out there at that Zendo, and everyone in their homes. Good to see you all. It feels like I've been way longer than I actually have. I was I was in Victoria over the weekend, practicing with Middleway Zen. Over there are friends, some old friends and some new friends. They had a retreat over the weekend, first in-person one they had had in a very long time. So it was really lovely to be there. It was so beautiful, such a beautiful weekend with the blue sky and fall colors and that glorious moon. I hope you enjoyed the full moon as much as I did. I should have tried to find a koan about the moon, but I didn't. Tonight's koan is about a golden fish. But first, I just want to see, how are you doing with these koans? We've given you a few now, and you don't have to jump around. You don't have to take them all on or jump around between them. But I hope that there's been one at least that's kind of just sparked for you, that maybe has continued to come up for some ongoing inquiry, either in your Zazen practice or even through the day, to just have that image or that phrase or word arise and just see what it has to offer you. You don't have to do really formal koan practice to allow these into your life. And there may be something that your life has presented you with that is your koan. You know, life provides plenty of koans. And these old classic ones, you know, they're just stories. They're the folklore of Zen that have come down to us. They're not holy scripture or anything like that. So we can practice with them in a way that's helpful to us. I think they're often, you know, there many of them are dialogues, and they're not just necessarily question and answer, but just some are. But there's a kind of call and response quality to them. And so you may find that just in your life, there's a kind of sense of call, some question or something is calling. And so you hold that open, sort of open-handed inquiry, like, what's your response? What's your response? So in Victoria, I asked Onsen, who some of you know, who practices over there, what I should talk about. And she said, well, Wayne, who's their teacher over there, is just going to give a basic talk about Zazen. She said, why don't you talk about koan, something about koans, because that's what you're doing for practice period. And I said, so I thought, okay, I'll do a talk about koans about Zazen. So I did. And I might reprise that for you some other time. But after my talk, there was some time for Q&A. And Wayne asked me, is it better for someone who's just beginning to practice with koans to choose one they think they already understand or one that they just totally don't understand at all? And I said, well, maybe one of each. One of each, because it's not maybe so much a matter of whether you understand it or not, or think you understand it or not, but maybe one that maybe you're a little bit familiar with already and it has some sort of spark for you. That's good to practice with, but also one that is completely unfamiliar and you are completely baffled by. It's worth spending some time with one of those as well. So I thought I should take my own advice. Because so far, I've been choosing ones that I'm a little bit, you know, more or less familiar with, that I really like them and I want to share them with you. So I decided to choose one that I've never explored before and that didn't immediately stand out for me. So here it is. It's case 33, which is called Sancheng's Golden Fish. Although I will admit the image of the golden fish caught my eye. So this is an exchange between Sancheng and Shuifeng. Sancheng was a Dharma heir of the great Linji, who was the founder of Rinzai Zen in China. And Sancheng was one of his main students and compiled the record of Linji, the Linji's teachings. And Shuifeng, on the other hand, studied with a number of renowned Zen masters, including Dongshan, who was the founder of Soto Zen lineage in China. But I think he got Dharma transmission from a Rinzai teacher. So, but he practiced with a number of teachers. So these two, the relationship between these two, is not teacher student. They're peers, and maybe a little bit friendly rivals. So here's how it goes. Sancheng asks Shuifeng, "The golden fish that's passed through the net, what does it use for food?" And Shuifeng answered, "When it comes out of the net, then I'll tell you." And then Sancheng sort of fired back, "The teacher of 1,500 people, yet you don't even know a saying." And then Shuifeng said, "My tasks as abbot are many." So at first reading, at first glance, this doesn't seem to make much sense, does it? So we'll have to break it down a little. First, the golden fish that's passed through the net. We can see as a metaphor for an awakened person, or a Buddha, who has passed beyond the barriers of dualistic thinking that separate us from others, that cut us off from the world. You know, us and them, right and wrong, Republican and Democrat, etc. All the barriers, all the walls that we erect between ourselves and the world. We spend our days entangled in the net of these habitual patterns of worrying about whether we are better or worse than others, whether we can avoid what we don't want and get what we do want in life. So that's the net, the net of entanglement. We could see this net a little bit like the gateless gate of the famous koan collection by the name Mumon Khan, which means no gate barrier or no gate gate. Zen master Mumon, same name as the collection, no gate, Mumon means no gate, writes in the preface of that collection, "There is no gate from the beginning, so how do you pass through it?" The gate and the net are illusory, like all the stories of constriction and limitation that we create about self and others. So one who has passed through the net would be an awakened person, a Buddha, not subject to the hungers of the world. So what would that golden fish use for food? But Shuifeng doesn't rise to the bait of the question. He says, "When you come out of the net, I'll tell you." What he's saying is when you're with inside the net, when you're still entangled, you really can't see the truth beyond. You know how persuasive those stories can be. You know, they're very hard to talk ourselves out of. But sometimes they just drop away, right? Something shifts, opens. So his answer is not just kind of, he's not just being flippant. It sounds flippant, but he's not. He's saying when you're still in the net, you can't hear the answer. You can't know the answer. But then Sancheng shoots back, the teacher of 1,500 people, yet you don't even know a saying. Which sounds kind of insulting, doesn't it? Is he just dodging Shui Feng's challenge? And then Shui Feng delivers this sort of non sequitur. My tasks as abbot are many. Is he just making excuses? I think there's more than that going on. These two are kind of playing with each other. So it helps to consult the commentaries. Wansong, who's the commentator in the Book of Serenity where this koan appears, first establishes that both parties to this encounter are distinguished personages. He calls them adepts. Adepts meaning, you know, they've practiced a lot. They have the ability to move freely in this conversation. And then he says this, Sancheng, in posing the first question, undeniably set out a bowl of glue in a forest of thorns. Then he says, Shui Feng, at first, is 30 steps away, watching you looking in on yourself and drawing you out of yourself. When he said, wait till you come out of the net, then I'll tell you. He's kind of watching, observing the response. And then Wansong says, strange, it's like a national champion playing chess, first looking several moves ahead before he makes his move. So he's describing these two guys, you know, in this conversation. Sancheng, and still this is the commentary, Sancheng, seeing that at this stage, victory and defeat are not distinguished, went by a different route and said, you're the teacher of 1,500 people, yet you don't even know a saying. And then he says, using the tooth and nail of the cave of Dharma, he captured him alive. So he's kind of describing this. This Dharma encounter that's sometimes referred to as Dharma combat, which I'm not sure I completely buy into, although sometimes it does seem like a combat. But these guys, I think, are being more playful than that. They're fooling around at a very high level. And then again, this is the commentary. He says, Shui Feng, honest and sincere, just said, my tasks as abbot are many. He says, these two elders, one letting go and one holding fast, each has a way out. So they're doing a little dance, you know, one holding firm and then one dodging. And there's sort of like two really good tennis players. You know, just giving it their all, and they don't really care who wins or loses. That was just a really good shot to return. Does that make sense? I think that's what they're doing here. There's just a full engagement in this exchange. And they're deliberately not responding in conventional ways. They're not trying to get the right answer. And later in this commentary, he adds that for them, the eight worldly winds, pleasure and pain, loss and gain, fame and disrepute, praise and blame, are just breezes blowing past for these two. Ordinarily, we're kind of buffeted, we're thrown off base by these eight worldly winds. You know, we want to avoid pain and we want to get pleasure. We want to avoid loss and get gain. We want to avoid shame and blame and disrepute. We like the fame and the praise, right? So we're blown, or sometimes we kind of turn it around and we kind of want to avoid the praise, because that has its hazards too. You know, sometimes we even turn these upside down, but we're still blown off base by these eight worldly winds. But these guys, those are just little breezes passing by. This same koan appears in the Blue Cliff Record, another collection. And the commentator in that one, in that presentation, Yuan Wu, says this: when these adepts meet, there was one catch and one release. Each acted weak when encountering strength, and acted noble when encountering meanness. Acted weak when encountering strength, and acted noble when encountering meanness. If you form your understanding in terms of victory and defeat, you haven't seen Shui Feng even in your dreams. So he's saying, don't look at this as, actually he's saying, don't look at this as Dharma combat, as one winning and the other losing. Look at these two men, he says. Initially, both were solitary and dangerous, lofty and steep. In the end, both were dead and decrepit. But was there still gain and loss, victory and defeat? When these adepts harmonized with each other, that's not the way it was. Yeah. This line about acting weak when encountering strength and noble when encountering meanness just reminded me of so many passages in the great Taoist classic, the Tao Te Ching. So I'm going to just read you a few passages from it, and you will see that it is full of koans as well. Mm-hmm. You can find koans all over. If you overesteem great men, people become powerless. If you overvalue possessions, people begin to steal. The master leads by emptying people's minds and filling their cores, you know, their hearts, by weakening their ambition and toughening their resolve. He helps people lose everything they know, everything they desire, and creates confusion in those who think that they know. Practice not doing, and everything will fall into place. Translation is a challenge because Chinese doesn't offer you the pronouns. So he switches back between he and she in here, which still is not the perfect solution. The Tao is infinite. The Tao means way, the way. Right? Why is it eternal? It was never born, thus it can never die. Why is it infinite? It has no desires for itself, thus it is present for all beings. The master stays behind. That is why she is ahead. She is non-attached from all things. That is why she is one with them. Because she has let go of herself, she is perfectly fulfilled. The Supreme Good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It is content with the low places that people disdain. Thus it is like the Tao. In dwelling, live close to the ground. In thinking, keep to the simple. In conflict, be fair and generous. In governing, don't try to control. In work, do what you enjoy. In family life, be completely present. When you are content to be simply yourself and don't compare or compete, everybody will respect you. This is a rather liberal translation. There's another one that's more literal, but this flows more easily. Fill your bowl to the brim and it will spill. Keep sharpening your knife and it will be blunt. Chase after money and security and your heart will never unclench. Care about people's approval and you will be their prisoner. Do your work, then step back, the only path to serenity. Success is as dangerous as failure. Hope is as hollow as fear. What does it mean that success is as dangerous as failure? Whether you go up the ladder or down it, your position is shaky. Mm-hmm. When you stand with your 2 feet on the ground, you will always keep your balance. What does it mean that hope is as hollow as fear? Hope and fear are both phantoms that arise from thinking of the self. When we don't see the self as self, what do we have to fear? See the world as yourself. Have faith in the way things are. Love the world as yourself. Then you can care for all things. There's more. Those are just some that I thought resonated. And that these two old Zen guys from hundreds of years ago in China would have been familiar with. Mm-hmm. They would have known these passages, and that would have informed this interaction, so that they could have this playful encounter, upending the conventions of victor and vanquished, famous and ignominious. Success or failure. Can you imagine a world where we could let go of our preciously held positions and opinions and embrace each other's humanity? If we could swim out of that tangled net together. That may sound like an impossible dream from the vantage point of the news right now. But in any moment of letting go, we can swim out of that net, and we can do it together. There's a line in the verse that accompanies this koan that goes, "This beautiful fish won't agree to be sunk in a pickle jar." So don't let yourself be sunk in a sour pickle jar of your worn-out beliefs and habits. Leap up like a salmon. Like a carp. Take the leap into the unknown, even if you have to practice taking small leaps first. And you will see the net vanish before your eyes as though it was never there, and really it wasn't. So I want to thank you all for giving me the chance to become better acquainted with this koan, which I didn't know before, and I hope maybe you have come to appreciate it a little bit too. So what I'd like you to think about and maybe share with each other in small groups is when you think of these eight worldly winds, pleasure and pain, loss and gain, fame and disrepute, praise and blame, which ones do you feel particularly most vulnerable to being blown off course by, out of kilter, off balance? That's one question. What would it be like to meet aggression with humility? To meet meanness with nobility? Remember that expression? Meeting aggression with humility, meanness with nobility. I think that nobility might suggest meeting meanness with patience and kindness. Mm-hmm. What would that be like? It's kind of a radical, countercultural way of being in this world when so many are quick to make enemies rather than friends. So how do you think this might play out in your own life and practice? Meeting aggression with humility, meanness with nobility. So two questions. Those eight worldly winds, how are you particularly vulnerable to being blown off course? And what would it be like for you in your daily life and practice to, you know, meet aggression with humility, meanness with kindness and patience? Or anything else that you'd like to share, any reflections that came up for you as you considered this golden fish koan. Yeah, how's your golden fish these days? Okay, thank you everyone. So we'll say goodnight to the folks over there in Wall Street and on Zoom. And we'll let the Wall Street folks divide the Zoom folks up into groups. And likewise, Wall Street, thank you everyone. Be well. And we'll sign off go ahead, sign us off. And we'll, I think we have time to just go around our circle just as we are, and each person take just a few minutes to share a reflection. I have to stop the recording. Thank you.